Chapter 8 of Warlord of Kor by Terry Carr. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Warlord of Kor, Chapter 8. Reinison stared at the dead screen for only a moment. He wheeled and ran back to the outer room. "Let's get those flyers up. Mara's found them, but they've brought her down." He was already going out the door as he spoke. Manning and the others were right behind him as he dashed out onto the field. Reinison headed for the nearest flyer, a small runabout which had been discarded as obsolete on the inner worlds and consigned to use out here on the edge, where equipment was scarce. He leapt through the port and was shutting the door when Manning caught it. "Where are they? What's happened to the woman?" "They were shooting something," Reinison snapped. The knife scar over his right eye stood out sharply in his anger. "She crashed, maybe badly hurt. She didn't have too much altitude, though. The hell with where she is. Follow me." He slammed the door and squeezed into the flying seat. While he warmed the engines, he saw the others scattering across the field to the other flyers. In a moment, the hum of the radio set told him that their communications were open. He saw the props of the other flyers starting to turn and flicked on his mic. "They're on the other side of the south range," he said quickly. "She didn't give me coordinates, but I should be able to find the spot. When we get there, we land away from the city and go in on foot." Manning's voice came coldly through the radio set. "Are you giving orders now, Lee?" "Right now I am, yes. If you want to try going in before reconnoitering, that's your funeral. They have weapons." "When we touch ground again, I'll take over," Manning said. "Now let's get going. Lee, you're first." But Reinison was already starting his run across the field. When he had some speed, he kicked in the rocket booster and fought the little flyer skyward. When he had caught the air, he banked southward and fed the motors all he had. He didn't look around for the others. He was setting his own pace. The mountain range was 10 miles to the south. They should be able to make it in 5 or 6 minutes, he figured. Below him, on the dry flat, he saw the pale shadow of his flyer skimming across the dust. The drone of the motors filled the compartment. The radio cut in again. It was Manning. "What's this about a city, Lee? Is that where they are?" "The City of the Temple," Reinison said. "It's down among the overhanging rocks. No wonder we hadn't seen it before. Doesn't seem to have been used for centuries or more. But that's where the Temple of Kor is, and the Herlogi are all in the temple." Static hissed at him for a moment. "How did they bring her down?" someone asked. It sounded like Stoworth. "Probably the disintegrators," Reinison said. "The Herlogi don't have many of them, but they've got enough power to give us a lot of trouble." "And they're using them, eh?" Manning said. "What do you think of your horses now, Lee?" Reinison didn't answer. In a few minutes they were over the range. Reinison had to scout for a while before he found the pass he had seen on Mara's screen, but once he saw it below him, he followed it out to the other side. The city was there, lying darkly amid the shadows of the mountains. Reinison banked off and sat down half a mile away. He waited for the others to land before he left the flyer. He took a pair of binocs from the supply kit and trained them on the city across the flat, but he couldn't find Mara's fallen flyer. When they were all down, he clambered out of the compartment and alighted heavily in the dust. Manning strode quickly to him, wearing twin stunners. He took one from its holster and fingered it thoughtfully as he spoke. "The main party was back in the pass. They should be here inside half an hour. We'll storm the temple immediately. We've got them outnumbered." Reinison made a dubious sound deep in his throat, looking out at the city. He was remembering that he had seen it before from this flat, and had stormed it before. The defensive walls were high. "They can fire down on us from the walls," he said in a low voice. "There's no cover out there. They'd wipe half of us out before we could get in." "We can come around from the pass," Manning said. "There's plenty of cover from that direction."
"And more fortification, too," Reinison snapped. "Just remember, Manning,
That city was built as a fortress. We'd have to come from the flat. Manning paused, frowning. We've got to take them anyway, he said slowly. Damn it, we can't just stand here and wait for them to come out at us. What are they doing anyway? Reinison regarded the older man for several moments, almost amused. Right now, he said, they're probably having a conference. With the outsiders. That's where the machine is, remember? Then the sooner we attack, the better, Manning said. Mark, get the main party on the hand radio. Tell them to get here as fast as they can. He turned for a moment to look out across the flat at the city. And you can promise them some action, he said. Stoworth dropped the radio from his shoulder and threw back the cover. He switched on the power, and static sounded in the dry air. He lifted the mic, and a voice cut through the static. Is anyone picking this up? Is anyone there? It was Mara's voice. Reinison knelt beside the set and took the mic from Stoworth's hand. This is Lee. Are you hurt? Lee? I hear you. Are you hurt? Not badly. Lee, what are you doing? I saw the flyers land. Manning wants to attack the city as soon as the land party gets here. What's going on there? I'm in the temple. I've been trying to communicate with them. I've got an interpreter, but they don't listen to what I say. Lee, this is incredible here. They've brought out a lot of weapons. Some of them don't work. The hall is half filled with dust and sand, and they move so clumsily. They're trying to hurry, because they saw you too. But it's like they've forgotten how. They think they can get rid of us all, but it's pitiful. They're so slow.
Those disintegrators aren't slow, Reinison said.
Manning was standing beside him. He dropped a hand on his shoulder, but Reinison shook it off.
Are they using the machine, the altar?
They were using it when they brought me in. I think it is the outsiders, but they don't seem to know it's just a machine. They kneel in front of it and chant. It's so strange in that language of theirs, those thin, high voices and the echoes.
They're holding you prisoner?
Yes. I think they want to hold you off till they can get ready for their own attack.
For their what?
Reinison stood up and looked toward the city. He could see no movement there. I know, it's incredible. Lee, they don't know what they're doing. Horng said on the interpreter that they were going to drive us off the planet, and then rebuild their cities and rearm. It's something to do with Kor, or the outsiders. The orders have changed. They think that if they can drive us away for a while, they can build themselves up to where they can repel any further touchdowns here.
This order came from the machine?
Yes. There was a mistake, and Horng realized it after you linked with him this morning. The outsiders, or Kor, whatever it is, had overestimated us.
Maybe then, but not now.
They're committing suicide, Reinison said. I know, and I tried to tell them that, but the machine says differently. Lee, do you think that's really the outsiders?
If it is, he said slowly, they wouldn't send the Herlagi against us without some help.
He thought a minute while the wind of the flat blew sand against his leg and static came from the radio. They could be making another mistake, Mara said. I'm sure what they told the outsiders wasn't true. They think they're as strong as they were before. But their eyes are afraid. I know it.
Do they know what you're saying to me?
No. Lee, I'm not even sure they know what a radio is. Maybe they think I carry my portable altar with me.
Her voice had taken on a frantic note.
It's a simple case of freedom of religion, Lee. Freedom of religion.
Mara, calm down. Calm down.
He waited for a few seconds until her voice came again more quietly. I'm sorry. It's just that they're so...
Forget it. Sit tight there. I think I know how to slip in, alone. He switched off. He stood up and shrugged his shoulders heavily, loosening his tensed muscles. Then he turned purposefully to Manning. The rest of the party won't be here for a while yet, so you can't possibly go in now. I'm going to try and get Mara out before any fighting starts.
What if they capture you too? Manning said. I can't hold off an attack too long. You could be right about the outsiders helping them. The sooner we finish them off, the better.
Reinison looked coldly at him.
You heard what Mara said. We won't have any trouble taking them. You can't attack them while she's in there, though. Or can you?
Lee, I've told you I can't take chances. If the outsiders are in this, it's a dangerous business.
You can go in if you want, but we're not waiting more than half an hour for you to get out.
Reinison met his gaze steadily for a moment, then nodded brusquely.
All right.
He turned and moved into the overhanging shadows of the mountains toward the ancient, alien city. He stayed in the shadows as he approached the walls of the fortress, darting quickly across exposed ground. The Herlogi were large and powerful. Physical battle with them was, of course, out of the question. But he had some things on his side. He was small, and therefore less likely to be seen. He was faster than the quiet, aged aliens. And he knew the city, the fortress, and the temple almost as well as they did. Perhaps better, in fact, for his purposes. For while he had shared Tebron's mind, he had been, not only Tebron, but also Reinison, Earthman. A corner of his mind had been alert and aware, hearing the distant screams of Horn, wondering about the design of the Altar of Kor. And he had seen other things when he looked through Tebron's eyes. When the ancient warlord had stormed the city fortress, there had been an observer in him who had said, "An Earthman could go in this way unobserved. A smaller attacker could slip through here, could conceal himself where no Herlogi could reach." He arrived at last at the base of the wall where the blunt rocks of the mountains tumbled to a dead end against flat, weathered stone. So far he must not have been seen. There had been no disintegrator beams fired at him, no leathery Herlogi heads watching from the walls. He flattened against the stone and raised his eyes to the batteries. The wall here had been built higher than the portions which faced the flat, and it was stronger. No one had tried to storm the city from this position, because it was too well protected. But the walls had been built against the heavy, clumsy bodies of the gray aliens. With luck, a man could scale this wall. The footholds in the weathered stones would be precarious, but perhaps it could be done. And the Herlogi, who regarded this wall as impregnable, would not be guarding it. Sighting upward from the flat against the wall, he chose his path quickly and began to climb. The stone was smooth but grainy. He dug his fingers into narrow niches and pulled himself slowly upward, bracing himself with footholds whenever he could. It was laborious, painful work. Twice he lost handholds and hung precariously until his straining fingers again found some indentation. Sweat covered him. The wind from the flat whipped around the wall and touched the moisture on his back coldly. But his face was set in a frozen grimness, and though his breath came in gasps, he made no other sound. When he had neared the top, he suddenly seemed to reach a dead end. The stones were smooth above him. His arms ached, his shoulders seemed deadened. He clung numbly to the wall and searched for another path. When he found it, he had to descend 10 feet and move to the right before he could reascend. As he retraced his route down the wall, he noticed blood where his torn fingers had left their mark, but he could not feel the pain in his fingers. At last, when the wall had come to seem a separate world of existence which was all that he would ever know, a vertical plane to which he clung with dim determination, hardly knowing why any longer, at last he reached the top. His groping hand reached up and found the edge of the wall. His fingers grasped it gratefully, and he pulled himself up to hang by both hands and survey the interior of the fortress. A deserted floor stretched before him, shadowed by the late afternoon darkness which crept down from the mountains to rest on the aged remains of the city. 40 feet down the walkway he saw stairs descending, but his head swam and all he could focus on clearly was the light film of dust and sand which covered even this topmost level of the city, blown in shallow drifts against the walls which rose a few feet above the floor here. There were no footprints in that dust. No one had walked here for thousands of years. Wearily, he pulled himself over the last barrier and fell numbly to the floor, where he lay for long minutes fighting for breath. His lungs were raw. The thin air of the planet caught and rasped in his throat. His hands were torn and bleeding, and the knife scar over his right eye had begun to throb, but he ignored the pain. He had to clear his head. Eventually he was able to stand, swaying beneath the dark sky. Below him he saw the city, broken and dim, empty streets winding between fallen walls and pillars. Mara's flyer lay shattered against one of those broken walls. Seeing it, he wondered how badly she had been hurt. He moved toward the stairs and descended them slowly. The stairs of the city were as he had remembered them from Tebron's memories, and yet not the same. To the Earthman they were steep. The steps were like separate levels, 3 feet across and almost 4 feet deep. His legs ached at each step as the shock of his weight fell on them. He reached the bottom level and paused in the doorway onto the street. It was empty, but he had to think a moment before he could remember his bearings. Yes, the temple was that way, somewhere down the dusty street. He moved through the deeper shadows at the base of the buildings, remembering. Tebron had taken this city at the head of a force of warriors. To him it had been large and majestic, a place of power and knowledge. But Rynison, moving wearily through the dust of the ages which had fallen upon the city since the ancient king, found it not merely large, but huge, not majestic, but feudal. And the power and knowledge which it once had held was but a dusty shadow now. Somewhere ahead in the temple, the survivors of that ages-old culture were trying to bring the city to life again. With or without the outsiders, he felt, they must fail. They really wanted to bring themselves back to life, to reawaken their minds, their dreams, their own power. But they tried to do it with memories, and that was not the way. No one was guarding the temple. Rynison went up the steps as quickly as he could, vaulting from level to level, trying to stay in the shadows, listening for movement. But sounds did not carry far in the air of Herlage. The aliens would not hear him approaching, but he might not hear any of them either until he stumbled upon them. At the top of the stairs he darted into the shadows of the colonnade which surrounded the interior. Doorways opened at intervals of 50 feet around the building. He would have to circle to the side and enter there, if at all. He slipped quickly between the columns and paused at the third doorway. He dropped to the floor, lay flat on his chest, and looked inside. They were all there, 2 dozen heavy gray aliens, sitting, standing, staring quietly at the floor. There was little movement among them, but nevertheless he could feel the excitement which pervaded the temple. No, not excitement, anxiety, fear. Watching those huge bodies huddling into themselves, he heard an echo of Horng's screams in his mind. These creatures were afraid of battle, of conflict, and yet they had thrust themselves into a fight which they must lose. Did they know that? Could they believe what the machine of the outsiders told them after it had been proven fallible? The Eye of Kor glowed dully in the dark inner room. 2 of the Herlagi stood silently before it, watching, waiting. But the religion of Kor had played no part in the lives of the Herlagi for generations. Now that the ancient, muddled religion had been brought to life again, could it have the same hold on them that it had once had?
Mara was on the floor of the temple, leaning with her back against the wall. One of the doorways from the outer colonnade was nearby, but five of the Herlagi surrounded her. And with a start, Reinison noticed that her left arm hung limp and twisted at her side, and blood showed on her forehead. Her face showed no emotion, but as he watched, she raised her right hand to run fingers through her long dark hair, nervously. She had not seen him, but she was waiting. When he made his move, she would follow him. Reinison slipped back from the doorway and circled the building again until he had reached the entrance nearest the girl. He drew out his stunner from its holster and looked at it for a moment. He would have to be fast. His weapon would give him no advantage against the disintegrators of the Herlagi, but surprise and speed might. And perhaps fear. He broke around the corner of the doorway at a dead run, firing as he went. Two of the Herlagi fell before they could even turn. They crumpled to the floor heavily. Then he screamed, a high scream, like horns, and as loud as he could make it, a wail, a cry of anguish and terror and pain. They felt it, and it touched a response in them. The Herlagi who surrounded Mara twisted to look at him, but they instinctively shrank away. He continued to fire, bringing down three more of them while the confusion lasted. He broke through to Mara, who was already on her feet. Without breaking his stride, he grasped her by her good shoulder and pulled her along with him as he ran through. But some of the Herlagi recovered in time to block their escape. Reinison wheeled, looking frantically around the room for an unguarded exit. None of those within reach were clear. He fired again and ran for the altar. One of the Herlagi had raised a disintegrator. Reinison caught him with the stunner as he fired, and the beam of the alien's weapon shot past his leg, digging a pit into the floor beyond him. Other weapons were raised now. They had only seconds left. But they had reached the altar. The two Herlagi there moved to block them, but they were unarmed and Reinison dropped them with the stunner. He pushed Mara past them and around to the side of the altar, seeking cover from the disintegrators. Behind the altar, there was a space just large enough for them to squeeze through. Reinison's heart leapt. He pointed quickly to it and turned to fire again as Mara pushed her way into the narrow aperture. A disintegrator beam hissed over his head. Another tore into the wall 2 feet away from him. The Herlagi were trying to keep their fire away from the altar itself. Reinison turned and squeezed behind the altar as soon as Mara was clear. It was tight, but he made it, and once through the narrow opening they found more room in the darkness. They could hear noise outside as the Herlagi moved toward the altar, but it sounded far away and dim. Mara moved back into the darkness, and he followed. They moved perhaps 20 feet into the wall behind the altar before they were brought to a halt. The passage ended. Well, no matter. If it was not an escape route, at least it would afford cover from the weapons of the Herlagi. Reinison dropped to the floor and rested. Mara sat beside him.
"Lee, you shouldn't have tried it," she said anxiously. "Now we're trapped."
He felt her hand touch his face in the darkness.
"Maybe," he said. "But we may be able to catch them off their guard again, and if so, we may be able to get out."
She was silent. He felt her lean against his shoulder wearily, her hair soft against his neck. Then he remembered that she had been hurt.
"What happened to your arm? And you were bleeding?"
"I think it's broken. The bleeding was nothing, though. You should see yourself. You were so tattered and bloody when you came in that I hardly knew you. Knights should come in more properly shining armor."
He grinned wearily.
"Wait till next time."
"Lee, where are we?"
she said abruptly.
Their eyes were becoming adjusted to the darkness, and they could see rising around them a complexity of machine relays, connectives, and pieces which did not seem to make sense.
Reinison looked more closely at the complex.
it was definitely outsider's work. But what was it? Part of the altar of Kor, obviously. But the outsider's telecommunicators had never used such extensive machinery. Yet it did look familiar. He tried to remember the different types of outsider's machinery which had been found and partially reconstructed by the advancing Earthmen in the centuries past. There weren't many. Then, suddenly, he had it, and it was so simple that he was surprised he hadn't thought of it before. "This is Kor," he said. "It's not a communicator. It's a computer." An outsider's computer. End of chapter 8. Chapter 9 of Warlord of Kor by Terry Carr. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Warlord of Kor, Chapter 9. Mara's frown deepened. She looked around them in the dimness, her eyes taking in the complexity and extent of the circuitry. It faded into the darkness behind them. Lines ran into the walls and floor.
"They built their computers in the grand manner, didn't they?" she said softly.
"I've seen fragments of them before," Reinison said. "This is a big one. No telling how much area the total complex takes up. One thing's certain, though. It's no ordinary computer of theirs. Not for plain math work, nor even for specialized computations, like the one on Rigel II. That was apparently used for astrogation, but it wasn't half the size of this. And navigation between stars, even with the kind of drive they must have had, is no simple problem."
"The Herlaji think it's a god," she said.
"That raised another problem," Reinison mused. "The outsiders built it, and must have left it here when they pulled back to wherever they were going, if they ever left the planet. But the Herlaji use it, and they communicate with it verbally. The Herlaji are apparently responsible for keeping it protected since then. But why should the Herlaji be able to use it?"
"Unless they're the outsiders after all," said Mara.
Reinison frowned. "No, I'm still not convinced of that. The clue seems to be that they communicate verbally with it. They must have been using it since before they developed telepathy."
"Couldn't there have been direct contact between the Herlaji and the outsiders back when the Herlaji were just evolving out of the beast stage?"
"There must have been," said Reinison. "The temple rituals are conducted in an even older form of their language than most remembered, a proto-language that was kept alive only by the priest caste, because the machine had been set to respond to that language."
"But aren't primitive languages usually composed of simple, basic words and concepts? How well could they communicate in such a language?"
"Not very well," Reinison said. "Which would explain why the machine seemed to make mistakes. Clumsiness of language.
So the outsiders, maybe, left the machine when they pulled out, but they set it to respond to the Herlaji language because our horse-faced friends were beginning to build a civilization of their own, and the outsiders thought they'd leave them some guidance." He stopped for a moment, remembering that first linkage with Horn, and Tebron's memories.
"The Herlaji called them the Old Ones," he said.
"And that order to Tebron, about the other race that they would meet some day, that was based on outsiders' observations."
"I wonder when the outsiders were on Earth," Reinison said. "Sometime after we'd started our own rise, certainly. Maybe in ancient Mesopotamia or India, or later, during the Renaissance."
"The time doesn't matter, does it?" Mara said. "They touched down on Earth, took note of us, and left. Somehow they thought we were going to develop more rapidly than we did."
"Probably before the Dark Ages," Reinison said.
"Maybe they didn't see that thousand-year setback coming." He stopped and stood up in the low passageway among the ancient circuitry.
"So here we are, second-guessing the outsiders. And outside, their protégés have disintegrators probably left by the outsiders, and they're just waiting for us to try to get out." "Our newfound knowledge isn't doing us much good, is it?" she said.
He shook his head slowly. "When I was still on the secondary sense teach units, I met Rennie Melholm for the first time. My father worked the spacers, so I don't even remember what planet this was on. But I remember the night I first saw Rennie. He was speaking from the top of a blue lumber pile, shouting about the corporations that were moving in. He was getting all worked up about something, and several people in the crowd were shouting back at him. I stopped to watch. All of a sudden, six or seven men moved in from somewhere and dragged him down from where he was standing. There was a fight. People were thrown all around. I hid till it was over. When the crowd finally cleared, there was Rennie. His clothes were torn, but he wasn't hurt. Every one of the men who had attacked him had to be carried away. I think one of them was dead. Rennie stood there laughing. Then he saw me hidden in the darkness, and he took me home. He told me that when he'd been younger, he'd worked his way all the way into Earth, and studied some of the cultures there. He'd learned karate, which was an ancient Japanese way of fighting.
Reinison took a deep breath.
He said everything a person learns will be useful some day, and I believed him.
A nice parable, Mara said.
We could use him against the Herlagi, though. Reinison was silent, thinking. If they could only catch the aliens off guard, but of course they couldn't now. He let his eyes wander aimlessly along the circuitry surrounding them. Tell me, old Kor, what do we do now? After a moment, his eyes narrowed. He reached up and traced a connection with his fingers, back to the front, toward the altar. It led directly to the speaker. The voice of Kor. And if he could interrupt that connection, put his own voice through the speaker, out through the altar. Mara, we're going out. I found my own brand of karate for our friends out there. He helped her to her feet. She moved somewhat painfully, her broken left arm hanging stiffly at her side, but she made no protest. We've got to be fast, he said. I don't know how well this will work. It depends on how much they trust their clay-footed god today. Quickly, he outlined his plan. Mara listened silently and nodded. Then he set to work. It was largely guesswork, following those intricate alien connections, but Reinison had seen this part of such machines before. He found the penultimate point at which the impulses from the brain were translated into sound and broadcast through the speaker. He disconnected this, his torn fingers working awkwardly on the delicate linkages. Ready? Mara was just inside the narrow passage behind the altar. She nodded quickly. Reinison twisted himself so that he could speak directly into the input of the speaker. He raised his voice to approximate the thin, high sounds of the Herlagi language. "Remain motionless! Remain motionless! Remain motionless!"
The command burst out upon the altar room of the temple, shattering the silence. The Herlagi turned in surprise to the altar and stood still.
"Remain motionless! Remain motionless!"
It was the phrase he had heard the machine use so often to Tebron, king-priest-leader of all Herlaj. It had meant something else then, but the proto-language of the Herlagi had no precise meanings. Given by itself, it seemed to mean precisely what it said.
"All right, let's go out," Reinison said, and the two of them broke from behind the altar.
The Herlagi stood completely still. Several of those that Reinison had dropped with his stunner had recovered consciousness, but they made no move either. Reinison and the girl ran right through the quiet aliens. Only a few of them turned shadowed eyes to look at them as they passed. They made the outside colonnade in safety and paused there.
"They may see through this in a minute," Reinison said. "Don't wait for me. Get out of the city."
"You're not coming?"
"I won't be too far behind. Get going."
She hesitated only a moment, then hurried down the broad levels of the temple steps. Reinison watched her to the bottom, then turned and re-entered the altar room. Reinison went quickly among them, taking their weapons. Most of them made no effort to stop him, but a few tightened their grips on the disintegrators and he had to pry those thick fingers from the weapons, cursing to himself. How long would they wait? There were 14 of the disintegrators. They were large and heavy. He couldn't hold them all at once. He dumped 5 of them outside the altar room and returned to disarm the rest of the aliens. Sweat formed beads on his forehead, but he moved without hesitation. Another of the Herlogi tightened his grip when Reinison began to take the weapon from him. He looked up and saw the quiet eyes of Horng resting on him. The leathery gray wrinkles which surrounded those eyes quivered slightly, but otherwise he made no movement. Reinison dropped his gaze from that contact and wrested the weapon away. As he started to move on to the next, Horng silently dipped his massive head to one side. Reinison felt a chill go down his back. In a few more minutes he had disarmed them all. He set the last 3 disintegrators on the stone floor of the colonnade, and a movement in the distance caught his eye. It was on the south wall of the city. 2 men stood for a moment silhouetted against the flat, then disappeared into the shadows. In a moment another man appeared, and he too dropped inside the wall. So Manning had already sent the men in. The mob was unleashed. Reinison hesitated for a moment, then turned and went quickly back into the altar room. Mara's radio was there. He lifted it by its strap and took it with him out to the colonnade. He could see the Earthmen moving through the streets now, darting from wall to wall in the gathering darkness of evening. In a short time it would be full night, and Reinison knew that these men would like nothing better than to attack in the dark. He warmed the radio and opened the transmitter.
"Manning, call off your dogs. I've disarmed the Herlogi."
The radio spat static at him, and for several seconds he thought his signal hadn't even been picked up. But at last there was a reply.
"Then get out of the temple. It's too late to stop this."
"Manning, I said get clear. You've done all you can there."
"Damn it, there's no need for any fighting."
Manning's voice sounded cold, even in the faint reception of the hand radio.
"That's for me to decide. I'm running this show, remember?"
"You're running a massacre," Reinison shouted.
"Call it what you like. Mara says they weren't so docile when you broke in."
Reinison's mind raced. He had to stall for time. If he could get Manning to stop those men until they cooled down.
"Manning, there's no need for this. Didn't she tell you that the altar is just a computer? These people haven't had anything to do with the outsiders since before they can remember."
The radio carried the faint sound of Manning's chuckle.
"So, now they're people to you, Lee? Or are you one of them now?"
"What the hell are you talking about?"
"Lee, my boy, you're sounding like an old horse-faced nursemaid. You linked minds with them, and you say you were practically a Herlogi yourself when you went into that linkage. Well, I'm not so sure you ever came out of it. You're still one of them."
"Is that the only reason you can think of that I might have for wanting to prevent a massacre?"
Reinison said icily.
"If they try to revolt once, they'll try it again," Manning said. "We'll crush them now."
"You think that will impress the Council? Slaughtering the only intelligent race we've found?"
"I'm not playing to the Council," Manning snapped. "I've got these men following me, and I'll listen to what they want."
Reinison stared at the microphone for a moment.
"Are you sure you aren't afraid of your own mob?" he said.
"We're coming in, Lee. Get out of there, or we'll cut you down, too."
"Manning!"
"I'm switching off."
"Not quite yet. There's one more thing, and you better hear this one."
"Make it fast," Manning said. His voice sounded uninterested.
"If any of your boys try to come in, I'll stop them myself. I've got the disintegrators, and I'll use them."
There was silence from the radio, save for the static. It lasted for long seconds. Then,
"It's your funeral."
There was a faint click as Manning switched off.
Reinison stared angrily at the radio set for a moment, then left it lying at the top of the steps and went back inside. The Herlogy stood motionlessly in dimness. It took a while for Reinison's eyes to adjust to it. He found the interpreter that Mara had left and quickly hooked it up to Horn. The alien's eyes, moving heavily in their sockets, watched him as he connected the wires. When everything was ready, Reinison lifted the interpreter's mic.
"The Earthmen are going to attack you," he said. "I want to help you fight them off."
There was no reaction from the alien, only those quiet eyes resting on him like the shadows of the entire past.
"Can you still believe that Kor is a god? That's only a machine. I spoke through it myself minutes ago. Don't you realize that?"
After a moment, Horing's eyes slowly closed and opened in acknowledgment.
"Kor was god, knowledge. The old ones died before time and passed into Kor. Now Kor is dead."
"And all of you will be dead too," Reinison said.
The huge alien sat unmoving. His eyes turned away from Reinison.
"You've got to fight them," Reinison said.
But he could see that it was useless. Horn had made no reply, but Reinison knew what was in his thoughts now.
"There is no purpose."
End of chapter 9. Chapter 10 of Warlord of Kor by Terry Carr. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Warlord of Kor. Chapter 10. Wearily, Reinison switched off the interpreter, leaving the wires still connected to the alien. He walked through the faintly echoing, dust-filled temple and stepped out onto the colonnade around it. It was almost dark now. The deep blue of the Herlaj sky had turned almost black, and the pinpoint lights of the stars broke through. The wind was rising from the flat. It caught his hair and whipped it roughly around his head. He looked up at the emerging stars, remembering the day when Horn had suddenly, inexplicably, stood and walked to the base of a broken staircase. He had looked up those stairs, past where they had broken and fallen, past the shattered roof, to the sky. The Herlaji had never reached the stars, but they might have. It had taken a god, or a jumbled legacy from an older, greater race to forestall them. And now all they had was the dust and the wind. Reinison could hear the rising moan of that wind gathering itself around him, building to a wailing planet dirge among the columns of the temple. And inside, the Herlaji were dying. The knives and bludgeons of the earth mob outside would only complete the job. The Herlaji were too tired to live. They dreamed dimly under the shadowed foreheads, dreamed of the past, and sometimes, perhaps, of the stars. Behind the altar, the huge and intricate mass of alien circuits glowed and clicked and pulsated, slowly, seemingly at random, but steadily. The brain must be self-perpetuating to have lasted this long, feeding its energy cells from some power source Reinison could only guess at, and repairing its time-worn linkages when necessary. In its memory banks was stored the science of the race which had preceded even the ancient Herlaji. The outsiders had sprung up when this planet was young, had fought their way to the stars and galaxies, and eventually, when eons of time pressed down, had pulled in their outposts and fallen back to this world. And they had died here, on this world, falling to dust which was ground under by the gray race which had followed them to dominance.
"Before time," Horn had said. That must have meant before the Herlaji had developed telepathy, before the period covered by the race memory. But the outsiders were still here, alive in that huge alien brain. The science, the knowledge, the strange arts of a race which had conquered the stars while men still wondered about the magic of lightning and fire. A science was encapsulated here
which could speak of war and curiosity as discontent, but could say nothing definite of contentment. An incomplete science? A merely alien science? Reinison didn't know. And the Herlogi. 26 of their race remained, dreaming under the heavy domes through which the stars shone at night and silhouetted the worn edges of broken stone. 26 gray, hopeless beings who had not even been waiting, and the Earthmen had come. For a moment, Reinison wondered if the Herlogi did not perhaps carry a message for the Earthmen too, that decadence was the price of peace, death the inevitable end of contentment. The Herlogi had stilled themselves, back in the gray past, had taken their measure of quiet and contentment for thousands of years, the searching drives of their race dying within them. And this was their end.
"There is no purpose."
Reinison shook himself and felt the cold wind cut through his clothing. It reawakened him. Stooping, he gathered up several of the disintegrators and brought them with him to the head of the massive stairs up which the attackers must come. He crouched beside those stairs, watching for movement below, but he couldn't see anything. Something about the Herlogi still bothered him. Kneeling in the gathering darkness, he finally isolated it in his mind. It was their hopelessness, the numbness that had crept over them through the centuries. No purpose? But they had lived in peace for thousands of years. No, their death was not merely one of decadence. It was suffocation. They had not chosen peace. It had been thrust upon them. The Herlogi had been at the height of their power, their growth still gathering momentum, and they had to stifle it. The end in view didn't really matter. It had not been what they would have chosen. And, having had peace forced upon them before they had been ready for it, they had been unable to enjoy it. And the stifling of scientific curiosity that had been necessary to complete the suppression of the war instinct had left the Herlogi with nothing. But it had all been so unnecessary, Reinison thought. The ancient outsider's brain, computing from insufficient evidence probably gathered during a brief touchdown on Earth, had undoubtedly been able to give only a tentative appraisal of the situation. But the proto-Herlogi language was not constructed to accommodate ifs and maybes, and the judgments of the brain were taken as law by the Herlogi. Now the Earthmen for whom this race had deadened itself into near extinction would complete the job, because the Herlogi had learned their mistake far too late. Reinison shook his head. There was a sickness in his stomach, a gnawing anger at the ways of history. It was capricious, cruel, senseless. It played jokes spanning millennia. Suddenly there were sounds on the stairs below him. Reinison's head jerked up, and he saw five of the Earthmen climbing the stairs, moving as quickly as they could from level to level, crouching momentarily at each beneath the cover of the steps. He raised one of the disintegrators, feeling the rage building up within him. There was a humming sound by his ear. The beam of one of the stunners passed by him, touching the rock wall. The wall vibrated at the touch, but the range was too great for the beam to have done it any damage. They were close enough, though, to stun Reinison if they hit him. He dropped flat, looking for the man who had fired. In a moment he found him. A small, lean man slipped almost silently over the edge of one of the step levels and rolled quickly to cover beneath the next. He had got further than Reinison had realized. Only three levels separated them now. He could see from this distance, in the near dark, the cruel lines of the man's face. It was a harsh, dirty face, with wrinkles like seams. The man's eyes were harsh slits. Reinison had seen too many faces like that here on the edge. This was a man with a bitter hatred, looking for the chance to unleash it upon anyone who got in his way. And the enjoyment which Reinison saw gleaming in the man's eyes chilled him momentarily. In that moment, The man leapt to the next level, sending off a beam which struck the wall 2 feet from Reinison. He felt the stinging vibration against his body as he lay flat. Slowly, he sighted the disintegrator at the top of the level under which the man had crouched for cover, and waited for his next leap. Within him, he felt only a bitter cold which matched the wind whipping above him. Again the man moved, but he had crept to the side of the stairs before he leapt, and Reinison's shot bit into the stone beside him as he rolled to safety. Now only one level separated them. Further down the stairs, Reinison saw the others moving up behind the smaller man. Still more were moving out from the other buildings and darting to the stairs, but he had no time to hold them back. There was silence except for the wind. And the man leapt, firing once, twice. The second beam took Reinison in the left wrist and spun him off balance for a moment. But he was already firing in return, rolling to one side. His third shot took the man's right shoulder off and bit into his neck. The man staggered forward 2 steps, trying to raise his stunner again, but suddenly it clattered to the floor and he crumpled on top of it. A pool of blood spread around him. Reinison moved back to the cover of the side wall and watched for the other men. The first one had got too near. Reinison hadn't realized how easily they could approach in this near darkness. He felt the numbness of the stunner beam spreading nearly to his shoulder. His left arm was useless. Cursing, he trained the disintegrator along the line of the steps and fired. The disintegrator cut through the stone as though it were putty, for a range of 20 feet. Reinison played the beam back and forth along the steps, cutting them down to a smooth ramp which the attackers would have to climb before they could get to him. One of them tried to leap the last few levels before Reinison could cut them, but he sliced the man in two through the chest. The separate parts of the man's body fell and rolled back to the untouched levels below. He had not had time to utter even a cry of pain. For a time now there was complete silence in the wind. Reinison could see the inert legs of the last attacker projecting out over the edge of the third level down, and undoubtedly the others saw them too. They were hesitating now, unsure of themselves. Reinison stayed pressed to the stone floor, waiting. The wind whipped in a rising moan through the upper reaches of the building. Another of the men slipped over the edge of the massive stairs, hugging the deep darkness at the side of the stairwall, and slowly inched his way up the newly flattened ramp. Reinison watched him coldly, through a gray haze of fury which was yet tinged with despair. What use was all this, the killing, the blood and sweat and pain? It disgusted him, yet by its perverse senselessness it angered him too. He cut a swath through the crawling man, through head and neck and back. The gory shell-like hulk slid back to the foot of the ramp. And abruptly the remaining men broke and ran. One of them rose and stumbled down the steep levels of the stairs, heedless of his exposure. With a shock, Reinison saw that it was Rennie Melholm. Another followed, and another. There were almost a dozen of them on the stairs. They all broke and ran. Reinison sent one beam after them, biting a depression into the rock wall beside them. Then they were gone. Reinison moved back from the head of the stairs and leaned wearily against the stone. His left arm was beginning to tingle with returning circulation now. He rubbed it absently with his good hand and wondered if they would try the sheer walls on the other side of the temple. He had scaled one of these ancient walls, but would they try it? Certainly they stood little chance coming up the stairs unless they gathered for a concerted rush. And who would lead such a suicidal attack? These men were vicious, but they valued their lives too. Yet he couldn't watch the black walls. Leaving the stairway unguarded would be the most dangerous course of all. In a few minutes the hand radio, forgotten on the stone floor behind him, flashed an intermittent light which caught his eye in the dusk. That would be Manning. Reinison slid the radio over to the head of the stairs and switched on there, keeping an eye on the stairway. "Lee, do you hear me?" "I hear you." His voice was low and bitter. "I'm coming in to talk. Hold your goddamn fire."
"Why should I?" said Reinison.
"Because I'm bringing Mara with me. It's too bad you don't trust me, Lee, but if that's the way you want it, I won't trust you either."
"That's a good idea," he said, and switched off.
Almost immediately, he saw them come out from behind the cover of a fallen wall across the dusty street. Mara walked in front of Manning. Her head was high, her face almost expressionless. The cold wind threw dust against their legs as they crossed the open space to the base of the steps. Reinison stood motionless, watching them come up. Manning still had his two stunners, but they were in their holsters. He kept behind the girl all the way, pausing before pushing her up the open ramp at the top, then moving even more closely behind her. Reinison stood with the disintegrator hanging loosely in one hand at his side. On the colonnade, Manning gripped the girl by her undamaged arm. He nodded to one of the doorways into the temple, and Reinison preceded him inside. As they entered, Manning lit a handlight and set it on the floor. The room was thrown into stark relief, the shadows of the motionless aliens striking the walls and ceiling with an almost physical harshness. Manning paused a moment to look at the horlogy and at the altar across the room.
"We can hear each other in here," he said at last.
"What do you want?" said Reinison. There was cool hatred in his voice, and the knife scar on his forehead was a dark snake line in the hard glare of the handlight. Manning shrugged, a bit too quickly. He was nervous.
"I want you out of here, Lee, and I'm not accepting any argument this time."
Reinison looked at Mara, standing helplessly in the older man's grip. He glanced down at the disintegrator in his hand. Manning drew one of his stunners quickly and trained it at Reinison's face.
"I said, no arguments. Put the weapon down, Lee."
Reinison couldn't risk a shot at the man, with Mara in front of him. He carefully laid the disintegrator on the floor.
"Slide it over here."
Reinison kicked it across the floor. Manning bent and picked it up, returned the stunner to its holster, and held the disintegrator on him.
"That's better. Now we can avoid arguments. Right, Lee? You've always liked peaceful settlements, haven't you?"
Reinison glared at him, but didn't say anything. He walked slowly into the center of the room, among the horlogi. They paid no attention.
"Lee, he's going to kill them!" Mara burst out.
Reinison was standing now next to the interpreter. The handlight which Manning had set on the floor across the room was trained upwards, and the interpreter was still in the darkness. He lowered his head as if in thought and switched on the machine with his foot.
"Is that true, Manning? Are you going to kill them?"
His voice was loud and it echoed from the walls.
"I can't trust them,"
Manning said, his voice automatically growing louder in response to Reinison's own. He stepped forward, pushing Mara in front of him.
"They're not human, Lee. You keep forgetting that, for some reason. Think of it as clearing the area of hostile native animal life. That comes under the duties of a governor now, doesn't it?"
"And what about the men outside? Did you put it that way to them?"
"They do what I say," Manning snapped. "They don't give a damn who they kill. There's going to be fighting here, whether it's against the Herlogi or between the townsmen. As governor, I'd rather they took it all out on the horses here. Domestic tranquility, shall we say?"
He was smiling now. He had everything in control.
"So that's your purpose?" Reinison said.
There was anger in his voice, feigned or real, perhaps both. But his voice rose still higher.
"Is butchery your only goal in life, Manning?"
Manning stepped toward him again, his eyes narrowing.
"Butchery? It's better than no purpose at all, Lee. It'll get me off these damned outworlds eventually, if I'm a good enough butcher. And I mean to be, Lee. I mean to be."
Reinison turned his back on the man in contempt and walked past Horn to the base of the ancient altar. He looked up at the Eye of Kor, dim now when not in use. He turned.
"Is it better, Manning?" he shouted.
Does it give you a right to live while you slaughter the Herlaji?"
Manning cursed under his breath and took a quick step toward Reinison. His hard, black shadow leapt up the wall.
"Yes, it gives me any right I can take."
It happened quickly. Manning was now beside the massive figure of the alien Horng. In his anger, he had loosened his grip on Mara. He raised the disintegrator toward Reinison, and Horng's huge fist smashed it from his hand. Manning never knew what hit him. Before he had even realized that the disintegrator was gone, Horng had him. One heavy hand circled his throat, the other gripped his shoulder. The alien lifted him viciously and broke him like a stick. Reinison could almost hear the man's neck break, so final was that last twist of the alien's hands. Horng lifted the lifeless body above his head and hurled it to the floor, with such force that the man's head was stoved in and his body lay twisted and motionless where it fell. Afterwards there was silence in the room, save for the distant sound of the wind against the building outside. Horng stood looking down at the broken body at his feet, his expression as unfathomable as it had ever been. Mara stared in shocked silence at the alien. Reinison walked slowly to the mic lying beside the interpreter. He raised it.
"You can move quickly, old leather, when there's a reason for it," he said.
Horng turned his head to him and silently dipped it to one side. Reinison lifted the broken form of Manning's body and carried it out to the top of the steps leading down from the temple. Mara went with him, carrying the handlight. It fell harshly on Manning's crushed features as Reinison waited atop the huge, steep stairway. The wind tore at his hair, whipping it wildly around his head. But Manning's head was caked with blood. In a moment the men from the town came out from cover. They stood at the base of the steps, indecisive. They, too, were waiting for something. Reinison hefted the body up over one shoulder and drew a disintegrator with the hand he had freed. Slowly, then, he descended the steps. When he had neared the bottom, the circle of men fell back. They were uneasy and sullen, but they had seen the power of the disintegrator, and now they saw Manning's crushed body. Reinison bent and dropped the body to the ground. He looked up coldly at the ring of faces and said, "One of the Herlaji did that with his hands. That's all. Just his hands." For a moment everyone was still, and then one of the men broke from the crowd, snarling with a heavy knife in his hand. He stopped just outside the white circle of the handlight, the knife extended before him. Reinison raised the disintegrator and trained it on him, his face frozen into a cold mask. The man stood in indecision. And from the crowd behind him another figure stepped forward. It was Malholm, and his lips were drawn back in disgust. He struck with an open hand, the side of his palm catching the man's neck beneath his ear. The man fell sprawling to the ground and lay still. Malholm looked at him for a moment, then he turned to the men behind him.
"That's enough!" he shouted. "Enough!"
Angrily he looked down at the crumpled form of Manning's body.
"Bury him!" he said.
There was still no movement from the men. Malholm grabbed two of them roughly and shoved them out of the crowd. They hesitated, looking quickly from Malholm to the disintegrator in Reinison's hand, then bent to pick up the body.
"It's a measure of man's eternal mercy," said Malholm acidly, "that at least we bury each other."
He stared at the men in the mob, and the fury in his eyes broke them at last. Muttering, shrugging, shaking their heads, they dispersed, going off in two and threes to take cover from the wind-driven sand. Malholm turned to Reinison and Mara, his face relaxing at last. The hard lines around his mouth softened into a rueful smile as he put his arm around Reinison's shoulder.
"We can all take shelter in the buildings here for the night. You could use some rest, Lee Reinison. You look like hell. And maybe I can put a temporary splint on your arm, woman."
They found a nearby building where the roof had long ago fallen in, but the walls were still standing.
While Melhome ministered to Mara, he did not stop talking for a moment. Reinison couldn't tell whether he was trying to keep the girl's mind off the pain or whether he was simply unwinding his emotions.
"You know, I've preached at these men for so many years I've got calluses in my throat. And one of these days maybe they'll know what I'm talking about, so that I won't have to shout."
He shrugged. "Well, it would be a dull world where I didn't have a good excuse to shout. Sometimes you might ask your alien friends up there, Lee. What did they get out of choosing peace?"
"They didn't choose it," said Reinison.
Malhome grimaced.
"I wonder if anybody anywhere ever will. Maybe the outsiders did, but they're not around to tell us about it. It's an intriguing question to think about if you don't have anything to drink. What do you do when there's nothing more to fight against, or even for?"
He straightened up. The splint in Mara's arm was set now. He settled her back in a drift of sand as comfortably as possible.
"I've got another question," Reinison said. "What were you doing among those men who came at me on the steps earlier?"
Malholm's face broke into a wide grin.
"That was a suicidal rush on you, Lee. A damn stupid tactic. A rush like that is only as strong as the weakest coward in it. All it takes is one man to break and run, and everybody else will run too. So it was easy for me to break it up."
Reinison couldn't help chuckling at that, and once he had started, the tension that had gripped him for the past several hours found release in a full, stomach-shaking laugh.
"Ready, Malhome?" he gasped. "That's the kind of leadership this planet needs."
Mara smiled up from where she lay.
"You know," she said, "now that Manning is dead, they'll have to find someone else to be governor."
"Don't be ridiculous," said Malhome.
The end of Warlord of Kor by Terry Carr. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.